Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Yo, yo, welcome to another episode of the Forum Club. I am your host, Jovan Buha, joined by Bill Oram, as always. Bill, how is your off season? It's been a few days.
Oh, it's great, Jovan. I've gone to breakfast the last couple of days. I have played with my kids. I have, it's April 13th or 14th, and it's summer now for the next 5 or 6 months, at least from a Lakers standpoint, which is pretty hard to wrap your head around. I was actually thinking the other day as we were sitting in exit interviews on April 11th, I think that's the earliest I've ever been in exit interviews because the play-in has pushed everything earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's like, this is the, you know, I've covered the league for 10 years. I've covered some truly horrific teams, like the 17-win Lakers, the 21-win Lakers, and you never had a season end so early. So tells you all you need to know.
The 33-win Lakers.
The 33-win Lakers are right up there with the worst teams I've covered. I think if you go back and look at like the 6 or 7 worst seasons in Lakers history, the only two I didn't cover were the 74-75 Lakers that won 30 games and the 93-94 Lakers that won 33 games also. So all the rest of them I've been here for.
Yeah, I've 1-2-3 Cancun'd it down to San Diego, where I'm living my best life right now. And
oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's weird though, because we did not expect. I mean, the last few months, last few weeks, we kind of expected this, but obviously, what, six, seven months ago, this team was the Western Conference favorites.
Yeah.
And they ended up finishing 11th and missing the play-in tournament. I guess with a few days of reflection, what are your kind of first thoughts, be it from exit interviews or just kind of the season overall, and sort of what's on your mind right now?
Well, I think mostly trying to spin it forward, but you know, as if we look back at the season that was, I think, you know, we got a pretty good taste out of exit interviews of just how fractured this team was and just kind of how doomed this group was. When you heard Russell Westbrook talk about Frank Vogel, talk about, you know, not being allowed to be himself, which, you know, you wrote, I thought, wonderfully about, and kind of the sort of disconnect between Russell Westbrook and reality, and understanding who he is. And I think, you know, was it you or someone else had the line, like the disconnect between Russell Westbrook, who he is, and who he thinks he is?
That was me.
And, yeah. And I thought that was a really, I thought that really struck the, you know, kind of the heart of the issue. So, I mean, you know, there was that. There were players like Kent Bazemore and Wayne Ellington, you know, guys who didn't play a lot, but they were brought in to play a lot, and they were in that locker room, and they had some pretty harsh words about kind of the state of this team and kind of the lack of faith that this group could get it together, you know, from a pretty early stage. So, you know, really what we saw all along, and those seeds of doubt that were sown fairly early, like that you and I have talked about on this podcast, I think were validated by what came out of exit interviews. Obviously, the Lakers made a coaching move. For me, the issues are much bigger than, you know, Frank Vogel, who by the end of the season, yeah, I mean, you make a coaching change. It had gotten too out of hand. I don't think that there was any argument not to reset the coaching position, but I did think that the front office not only handled, you know, the firing terribly by letting it be reported before they could had a chance to talk to Frank. They, you know, I just think that, you know, this entire season was a terrible reflection on the systems and structure of the Lakers front office. And so going into the offseason, you know, it's what comes next. Where do the Lakers go? What do they change? And I, you know, I don't know that they're going to change that much institutionally. You know, I think the Lakers, you know, feel like they have the smartest people in the room and that they will figure it out. And, you know, we've seen sort of a fairly haphazard approach to free agency. They're going to be in the same position again this year where they're going to have to, you know, fill out the roster with a lot of minimum contracts. Will they do it better than they did a year ago? And then I guess just the other thing is, to me, there is no argument to try again with Russell Westbrook. You have seen what that looks like. And to go into next year with him on the roster would be just making the same mistake and falling into the same trap that you did last year.
I agree with everything you just said. I think on the Russ front, it was jarring. And I think we weren't necessarily surprised by what he was saying in his exit interviews, but I think the level of delusion and as you said, disconnect from reality of just, you know, putting the blame on everybody else. It was, I thought it didn't get enough attention how he kind of threw LeBron and AD under the bus, I put that in my story, but it was like, all season long that they kind of had that mantra of let Russ be Russ, and they never really took shots at him. They always were publicly supportive of him, even when we were hearing behind the scenes that LeBron wasn't necessarily the happiest with Russ and his play. And yet, you know, Russ continued to, and he had some of those barbs throughout the season where he would kind of say certain things about, it wasn't just that Frank, it did seem like it was sometimes at LeBron and AD. And I think for him to say, you know, obviously, you know, they said let Russ be Russ, but they weren't being honest. Like
it was even more blunt than your for those who didn't hear it. You know, there was a question about, you know, we heard all year about you know, LeBron and AD saying let Russ be Russ, and Russ interrupts the question to say, yeah, but that wasn't true. It's just, I mean, which speaks to the heart of the issues. Russ claims that he wasn't allowed to be himself, that he never got comfortable, that he wasn't allowed to get comfortable. And to me, if you're Rob Pelinka and you're trying to evaluate what to do, that tells you all you need to know about where Russ is at, what he learned from this season. He comes out of this season feeling like a victim. Okay, well, you can go be a victim in Indiana or Charlotte because this is over.
Yeah, I mean, and if anything, Russ was too much himself. That was the issue of the season. Mm. Was rough. The season was rough, but his season was rough, especially. But no, I mean, I think he was too much himself, and that was kind of one of the things I wrote. Was just I think Russ was basically this played out. You know, you and I spoke about this. A bunch of people talked about it going into the season of the concerns with Russ, and they all played out probably worse than people even, you know, expected if you were pessimistic. But like, it was all of the good of Russ was there, but worse, and all of the bad was there, but increased. And it was just, you know, he was not an effective player, and really by any measure. And you know, the Russ stands came after me after saying he's no longer an all-star level player, and they're referencing Washington, and it's like, he was not the player he was in Washington last year. He was a much worse player than he was in Washington. And you know, he did have a couple good stretches through the season, but those were like over a period of like a week or two. It was not sustained. So I think, honestly, I'm at the point with the Russ situation where I do think you exhaust any and every option to try to trade him. But if it comes down to it, I would rather send him home than
for a whole year,
for the whole year, and John Wall it and just say, you know, we're going to eat this cap. You know, we're going to eat your salary figure on our cap sheet. And yes, like it might ultimately make us a worse team in terms of depth and sustaining a LeBron or AD injury in the regular season. But he didn't really help them with that this season. So like, I think they're until he has a reality check with where he's at and admits that he needs to transition to a different phase of his career. He is no longer the player he once was, and he needs to, like, because, you know, he talked about him, I mean, saying that he sacrificed all this stuff and he made all these adjustments and he did all these things that he's never done before. And it's like, I don't know what he's talking about, because his numbers are almost like his usage was down, but not by much. And he wasn't cutting off the ball. He wasn't setting screens off the ball. He wasn't playing defense the way that he did early in his career. Like, he did not do any of those things. He did not improve as a shooter. Like, it's just, it was basically who he's always been in a smaller role. And it's just, that isn't, you know, that was where I was out in the rusting. I think on the, you mentioned Wayne and Kent. I thought one kind of macro takeaway for just how everything played out. Like, I think some of our concerns with, are there, when you have this cast of accomplished veterans, even though some of these guys, you know, hadn't won championships or been all-stars, like even a guy like Wayne Ellington, you know, 10 plus years in the NBA, started a lot of games. Like, those guys are proud. And I think one thing in the construction of this roster moving forward, not only do they need to find better fitting pieces in terms of skill set and go younger, but I think they have to be a little more careful with some of the personalities, because I think this has now been back-to-back seasons in which the Lakers have probably put too many guys together that expect to be playing. And you have seen at some point diminishing returns of like guy 12 who thinks he should be guy 7. That guy isn't going to be happy. And I think there is like there's been some chemistry stuff in the locker room, I think, where guys just too many guys expect to play. And you got to find the Wenyen Gabriels, the Stanley Johnsons, the Austin Reeves, who don't necessarily have those expectations and are okay with playing maybe 8 minutes one night, 20 minutes the other night. Because I think some of these veterans that they brought in ultimately just, you know, had different expectations for their role. And maybe that's a Frank thing. Maybe it's a Rob thing. I think it's kind of on everybody, but I think there was to what you were kind of saying earlier, like some of too many guys expected to play. And I think that was kind of a underlying issue that maybe wasn't talked about enough.
Yeah, I think that's true. And that's something that I think we identified, Jovan, at the beginning of the year. When you look at this roster, you know, even before they had Avery Bradley, who became a starter for the first half of the year, there were so many guys who you could look at and say, you know, this guy was brought in to play a role. You know, 12, 13 players. I mean, DeAndre, Dwight. I remember arguing with Dan Wicky from the LA Times, who covered DeAndre with the Clippers. And I was like, I don't think DJ can play. Like, where do you start him? The plan was to start small with AD at the five before all the injuries. Dwight's going to play. Where do you play DJ? And it's like, well, if you don't play DJ, you're going to lose him, because that's just, he came here expecting to play. He got bought out of a role where he wasn't playing in Brooklyn. And lo and behold, he was the starter for the first, maybe 20 games of the season. But, you know, they had a lot of guys like that who I'm like, and I didn't envision that like Wayne Ellington was not going to play. I didn't envision that Trevor Ariza wouldn't play once he was healthy. Those, that was not on my penciled out rotation for the season. But you also didn't know that Austin Reeves was going to be able to contribute at the level he did, or that Malik Monk would take the step that he did, which I mean was a huge part of like what limited success this team had. But it also speaks to the issues the Lakers had, that they needed so much from Austin Reeves and that they needed so much from Malik, because the other guys who were in those roles, you know, were not able to contribute. Kendrick Nunn never got on the floor. So, I just think that there is a lesson to be learned, like you said, of having too many guys who come in thinking they should be playing 25 minutes a night. Mathematically, it doesn't pencil out, and it's a really bad position to put your coach in. And I will keep hammering this. I don't think Frank Vogel necessarily, I don't think you had to fire Frank Vogel just because the season was a disaster. You had to fire Frank Vogel because of everything you did along the way to undercut him and put him in an untenable situation. I've written about this ad nauseum, so I'm going to repeat this for people who've heard me say this, but 3-year contract to start, no contract extension after the championship, contract extension after kind of a failed season, but it was only a 1-year extension. So that's going into this season. And then a roster that was really challenging, like a really unfair roster, I think, for any coach to have, Hall of Famers coming off the bench, on top of a bunch of guys who, are veterans, are proud, like you said. That was going to be a headache the whole way through. And that proved to be the case. And Frank had to make choices like benching Ariza and benching Kent Bazemore for, Avery Bradley, who wasn't on the roster, for Wenyen Gabriel and Austin Reeves and Malik Monk and Stanley Johnson starting on Christmas. That ended up being the meat of the Lakers rotation, not all these like guys with, big names the Lakers had signed. And that would be my, one thing that the Lakers need to get away from. This obsession with guys with big names. I mean, it's not to say that big name guys can't contribute. Of course they can. That's why they have big names. But it feels sort of like the Lakers go into, whatever their war room is, wherever Rob and Kurt and Linda and, that's basically the group, get together and talk about and put some names on the board. The tiebreakers or what determines who they go for tends to be, I'm familiar with that player because he's been around a long time, or I've seen him a lot, or he's somebody we have heard of a lot, or he won a championship previously. Not that is somebody who fits, whose skill set, size, where they are in their career helps balance out our roster. And you also need guys who can't, like Stanley Johnson is like the perfect 14th man for this team next year. He should be on the roster next year. He's earned that. but he should not be playing anywhere near the same role that he did this season. That would just make no sense, because that would mean that you are coming back with a roster that is more or less as good as the roster you had last year, and that was clearly not good enough.
Yeah. I think it's going to be a challenge, because I mean, you see, it's hard to hit on minimum contracts, and they're going to have to, like, at least you kind of have that a bit of that foundation of, you know, Austin, Stanley, and Wenyin. I think Kendrick is a bit of a wild card where maybe he can give you something, and you're already going to have that salary.
Yeah. How about Kendrick Nunn I mean, listen, and he's right. But Kendrick Nunn just saying, well, I think it's a no brainer for me to pick up my player option. Like, maybe it's happened before where a player just outright said what they were going to do in the offseason with an option. But, you know, he's got time to figure that out. There are conversations to be had with his agent, and he just was like, nope, that's it. I'll be back, because acknowledging that after not playing a season, nobody's giving him a $5 million contract next year. So he'll be back.
Yeah, no, that was amazing. So he'll be back. And I think, you know, they'll have the taxpayer MLE again. So they'll have the ability to spend up to $6.3 million, which isn't great. But, you know, I think that has to go to a wing. Like, they have to get whoever's the best player within the, you know, the height range of like 6'6 to 6'9 that is willing to take that money. Like, the Lakers need to throw that at that player. And it might cost, like, it's probably going to cost them Malik Monk. And I, you know, for as good as Malik was this season, I think if it comes down to picking between him and picking between the best, you know, 3-and-D wing that they can get with that exception, like, I think you kind of got to prioritize the wing, because that is the type of guy you need around LeBron and AD. And we've seen it so often. And like,
Trevor Ariza was the right idea, by the way. It's just, you needed 2016 Trevor Ariza, 2014 Trevor Ariza.
Yeah. And so I think moving forward, like, that is the type of guy. And it's crazy, because the Lakers went from having so many of those, you know, Kuzma, KCP, Alex Caruso, even Markieff moments for stretches.
Markieff moments. I love Markieff moments. Like, that's a great, like,
I was thinking moments in my head, but Markieff Morris for moments. You need those two way guys that can play 2 through 4, and they did not have enough of them. You know, Talen obviously had a disappointing season. Kent didn't pan out. Wayne didn't pan out. Trevor didn't pan out. And ultimately, you know, Austin and Stanley were, I think, highlights of the season. But, like, to your point, you know, Austin shot, what, 30, 31% on threes? He really struggled, especially in the second half of the season. Stanley, you know, is not much of a shooter. So, like, those guys were ultimately limited offensively and should be kind of, you know, a little deeper in the rotation. So, and then Malik is a bit of a defensive liability. So, even Melo, obviously a defensive liability as well. So, like, the Lakers just had these kind of, you know, just weird combination of players that I think never ultimately matched. And we saw that with their record. But yeah, I mean, it was, the exit interviews were very interesting. And I think we're going to see a lot of changes this offseason. And, you know, I think, where are you at with the coaching search and sort of what's realistic? Because I think I'm forgetting now who reported it, but already there was a report that Quinn Snyder, you know, might have some hesitation if he does become available with the yeah. Lakers job, with just sort of how hands-on the front office is and the way they handled the Frank Vogel situation.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
So what have you been hearing about the coaching search and sort of where are you at with what they need and what's realistic?
Yeah, I'm really curious to see it play out a little bit. Because I think that you have, there's obviously coaches still coaching who you could see getting in the mix. You know, Doc Rivers obviously being one, on top of Quinn Snyder. The Quinn Snyder thing is interesting just because Quinn and Rob Pelinka have a friendship and relationship dating back, many years. And you feel like if there was a coach who Rob would kind of get out of the way for, it would be Quinn. But I think it is telling. I do think that there is a possibility that, it's interesting because I've heard some pushback from people in the Lakers about the point I made that the way they handled the Vogel situation over these last 3 years could be seen as a negative to potential coaches. And my counter to that would be, if I'm applying for a job that appeals to me, but somebody tells me that the job is going to pay, X amount less than I previously made, or in this case, doesn't have the job security of, of another job, an equal job, that's going to kind of turn me away from the job that, doesn't offer as much. It's going to make me feel less good about going to the Lakers. Whether it's a tiebreaker or just sort of makes you think twice like that. There should be no thinking twice about being the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Especially with championship aspirations and with championship players. But I think the Lakers have created a situation where coaches have to at least, have the conversation of, is this a good situation? Is this a good situation for any coach? Rob Pelinka made a really, I thought, interesting point that really wasn't an X's and O's point at all, but basically felt like with the number of stars the Lakers have, that they need a coach who can essentially, he made it sound like kind of speak the language of a star, right? A coach who, is a powerful enough voice to sort of go toe-to-toe with LeBron and Anthony Davis. And I suppose Russell Westbrook, but who expects him back? And I actually feel like that might be a little bit of a failing of this front office if they are punishing Frank Vogel for not being, that kind of personality or that kind of voice when, Russell Westbrook's not going to be on this team. And Frank proved to be the right coach for LeBron and AD, the last time they were healthy and made a run at it. I don't think anybody was saying that Frank didn't have a powerful enough voice when he was, basically the spokesman through the situation in China, through the bubble, and after the tragedy involving Kobe Bryant, when he was essentially the only person from the Lakers organization who was speaking. So I thought that, kind of that framing was a little, hypocritical, but if we're talking about somebody who comes with like cachet and a voice and can sort of manage superstars, I initially think of Doc Rivers, right? Like that is somebody who, not a superstar himself as a player, but has been around a lot of stars. He's coached potentially the MVP this year and Joel Embiid, number two on my ballot. But, I could see the Lakers being very taken by Doc and his presence. Doc is many things, but he is certainly a coach with great presence. And I think that is something that the Lakers are looking for. And he also, would be kind of the ambassador of the Lakers, right? He would help sell whatever it is the Lakers are putting on the court. Fascinating for the Lakers to hire, not only the former Clippers coach, but the guy who, won the last championship in Boston. That feels, we're like in Bill Sharman territory at that point. But, that's somebody who jumps out to me as maybe checking that box. When you do hear people talk about like John Calipari, that kind of makes some sense if he was actually going to leave Kentucky. So, I don't know. I feel like it's too early because we don't really know who's going to be available or who is out there. I will say the Quinn thing, just of my own, my own critical thinking has always struck me as a bit of an odd fit, just for the reasons you outlined. He's a very detailed, very controlling, and not, I don't mean that in a bad way, but he just really controls his team and program. And how would he react to the amount of, meddling, frankly, that goes on from the Lakers front office with, Kurt Rambis and Rob Pelinka in coaches meetings and in film sessions. And just, I think it makes for a potentially awkward situation for any coach coming in.
Yeah, and I even wrote before the exit interview, I did a series of five off-season questions, and one of the things I asked with the coaching was, do they need someone with more gravitas, right? And I think that would be one of the I think I've always been more pro Frank than maybe most. I think we're aligned in that. But I think some of the criticism of Frank, in my opinion, has been overblown. I think at some point he needed to just stick to a lineup. He kept to me, the one criticism could be the starting lineup. So just, I know part of that was due to injury and the COVID stuff, but like he kind of kept saying, well, we keep losing, nothing's working. And it's like, well, if you keep shuffling the starting lineup, like give a lineup 5 games, 7 games, let's look at that sample size versus just, we tried this thing, it didn't work, let's try something else. Because I do think, based on what players, kind of reading the tea leaves of what players kept saying, it was clear internally that for some players, the inconsistency with the lineups and the rotation was something that was bothering them. And it did contribute to guys not knowing whether they were in the rotation or not, or how much they were going to play in a given night. And I think there, it could have been handled a little bit differently where, again, maybe, you know, even three or four games, let's just roll with this lineup, this rotation, and see how we do, versus constantly changing it game to game in hopes of finding something. I think that kind of messed with continuity. But aside from that, I think the gravitas is kind of a thing where you just kind of have it or you don't. And I think Frank is a little bit more soft-spoken, and it did seem like with some of the reporting that came out kind of post towards the end of the season, it did feel like he had lost the locker room to some extent, or part of the locker room at least. So I think part of that, you know, that is where a Doc, like I saw it firsthand with the Clippers, where Doc was the spokesman for the Clippers. And part of that was because Kawhi did not like to handle those duties. And kind of before that, they didn't have a superstar after they traded Blake. But I think Doc would take some of the heat off of Rob, off of LeBron, off of AD. Like he knows how to talk to the media, and he knows how to package things in a certain way. So personally, I think Doc would be a mistake. I think that from observing him with the Clippers and now observing him in Philly, I think that he's a little too old school in some of his tendencies, and he does know how to sell things. He does have that salesman quality, but in terms of X's and O's and just his actual strategy and philosophy, I think he's stuck in the 2000s.
You just made a really good point that I want to just emphasize, because I hadn't even thought of it like this. Is when things would get bad, Doc would be able to make it seem like it wasn't so bad.
Yeah,
and you know, I think with Frank, you know, Frank really kind of wore his heart on his sleeve a little bit, and you could see his frustrations. And Doc would gets frustrated, gets angry, but he, I think he can sort of spin it. And I could see, you know, if we're looking at a situation where it's like, hey, Rob Pelinka really, you know, made a mistake with the roster, or the Lakers didn't make a trade, or, you know, it seems like there's a real disconnect between, you know, whatever. You know, a lot of the stuff that has led to, and listen, the Lakers are terrible at PR. Like, I'll just say it. Like, they're terrible at messaging. And like what it is they're selling as, you know, as the story of the Lakers. They haven't had a consistent message. They've been bad at like crisis PR for a couple of years now. So, you know, that has been part of it. But, you know, Doc Rivers is, you know, not a PR person, but he actually does almost solve some of that problem because he can do that job concurrently with being the head coach. And I think that if I'm Rob Pelinka, and I know that we have struggled at messaging, you know, there is nobody who's better at messaging from the coach's seat in the NBA than Doc Rivers. Mm-hmm. You know, he is a salesman. And, you know, the Lakers' reputation has taken a hit over the last couple of years. Maybe to some degree what they need is a salesman.
Yeah. But what do you think of the Mark Jackson? Because I know Sam Amick from the Athletic reported it. I think that would be a disaster.
It's just interesting. Like, I don't really know why Mark Jackson hasn't gotten another job at all in you know, since he left the Warriors. Like, that seems what's interesting about Mark Jackson, though, is like, I mean, again, we're talking about somebody who has great presence, right? And does, you know, I do think would be able to speak to, you know, stars, and, you know, and clearly there's the respect factor with LeBron already because we've heard that he is would be in favor of Mark Jackson of available candidates. That said, this just is a can't miss hire. If you're the Lakers, this is probably going to be the last coach LeBron has with the Lakers, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to swing for the fences. You're going to try to get a name because you didn't get that last time. If you're Rob Pelinka, I don't think Rob Pelinka is going into this coaching search thinking he'd be satisfied coming out of it with like a Dave Yeager or Terry Stotts, even if one of them would be a good hire, you know, ultimately for this roster. I don't know that is where his head is at. Again, we know about the quest for star power. So I think he's going to be looking for somebody who does check that box and who can be kind of the coach for the rest of the LeBron tenure. So Mark Jackson, certainly star power, certainly like, you know, brand, you know, power. But if it goes sideways for whatever reason, I think there's just a little bit more on the line with the Mark Jackson hire. But I also would point out that LeBron James did not get his coach 3 years ago. If Mark Jackson is the guy that LeBron is in the boardroom beating the table saying that's who we need to get. If I'm Rob Pelinka, couldn't deliver Ty Lue, couldn't deliver Monty Williams. LeBron had to get on board with Frank Vogel, who he had no real feeling toward one way or another. And you also know that LeBron has a decision about an extension coming up. And if he does not exercise that, or if he does not negotiate that extension, he could be an unrestricted free agent in 1 year. So what are you doing to keep LeBron happy? You know, when they when they hired Frank Vogel, LeBron had 3 years left on his contract. And then, with a player option, it really was two. But like, you still had like a bit of a runway. There's really no runway with LeBron right now because you're going to hire a coach before you know whether he's signing that extension or not. So I do think what LeBron wants is going to be a factor here. It's always a factor, but I think it might be a more urgent factor. You were talking about, free agents and how the Lakers should operate with free agency and the kinds of players they needed. And I was doing a quick search of who's even available in those in kind of those spaces. Here's a few names and tell me who jumps out at you. Like what's he going to be commanding after missing a year and a half with injury?
Yeah. I think that would be someone.
Is he going to have to sign a minimum? Probably not, right?
Probably not.
Gary Harris.
I like Gary Harris. The only thing is he's small.
He's been playing really well, but I also don't think he's getting another contract like he just had. But 31-year-old Robert Covington, unrestricted. Yeah. I mean, I liked him for the Lakers at the trade deadline too. Those would all be, good players for the Lakers. They're younger than the guys they found last year. But also, I guess it's also worth noting that these are the kinds of players who end up getting paid because the league doesn't have enough of them. And these are and good teams end up, competing for players like Robert Covington. I mean, his last contract was, 4 years and $47 million. I don't know if he gets another deal quite like that, but I mean, I think he'll be an in-demand player. Mm-hmm. So I don't think, and I don't see that as a minimum, and probably not even what they'll have on the mid-level. Frankly.
Yeah. I mean, I think all those guys would be in the conversation for taxpayer mid-level, maybe at a minimum. I think those guys are all, to me, like $5 to $10 million players. So
Otto Porter is available. Otto Porter will be a free agent again. That was somebody I thought they should.
I mean, all these guys are better than anyone they had this year on the wing.
And like some things you just can't like blame the Lakers for, like not signing Patty Mills, like that's not their fault. I mean, he could have come to LA. He went to Brooklyn instead, but also, I guess there's, why did he choose Brooklyn? Like, what did he see with the Lakers that, made them not the more appealing destination? Like, how do the Lakers make themselves the most appealing destination? Probably by not being dysfunctional.
Well, and also, I guess, like, kind of now in retrospect, like, I think Patty will, wow, I'm really struggling today. Patty Mills, like he would have helped just from a talent perspective, and they didn't really, I guess it would have been him versus Kendrick Nunn, and having Patty Mills versus not having Kendrick Nunn, like obviously it is better, but they didn't necessarily need another small like guard that could shoot. They needed size on the perimeter. And again, I think in a vacuum, he's better from a talent perspective than, most of the guys on the team. But I do think even going for like the Patty Mills wasn't necessarily what they needed from that from that position.
I mean, they needed bench. They needed scoring off the bench. They needed some punch. Like they really didn't know they were going to get so much from Malik Monk, but like they needed
Malik and Melo. Yeah.
But like, this is like, again, I don't think this transforms the Lakers into a contender, but like they needed what Kendrick Nunn does. You know, they needed somebody who could kind of score off the bounce and had a little pop and like and could get shots up. So to me, you know, whether it was Kendrick Nunn or Patty Mills, they needed somebody who did that job. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it could have also been somebody else on a mid-level, or excuse me, on a minimum. What is our thinking here over these next few weeks? How long do you think the coaching search takes for the Lakers? Is this a drawn out process? I think Rob Pelinka said that he was expecting to have someone in place by the draft, or that'd be ideal to have someone in place by the draft. Do you think that's a reasonable timeline, or do you think it'll be sooner?
I think that's a reasonable timeline. I mean, you have to have someone in place by the draft. You have to have someone in place by free agency. I think it would be a mistake to start building this roster without knowing the identity of the roster. So I would say, I guess what the draft is late June. So you got 8 to 10 weeks here to kind of figure this out. I think a big part will be the playoffs and sort of, you know, a couple guys they're looking at, Nick Nurse, Quinn Snyder. Those guys are in 4 or 5 matchups that I think could go either way. With the news that, you know, Utah has been collapsing and it's been looking like they're going to blow it up. But with the news that Luka Doncic is now going to be out for game one, at least, I think that has to give Utah obviously a better chance to win that series. So, you know, maybe now Quinn makes the second round and I think they'd get smoked by Phoenix, but maybe that is enough to keep his job or, you know, whatever. So then the Nick Nurse situation, I think Toronto Philly is going to be a 6 or 7 game series. And with no Matisse Thybulle in the Toronto games, who knows? Like I really like Toronto. The couple games they played against the Lakers, I made me a fan, just for their roster and how they play. So, we'll see with those, but I guess my larger point is like I think it's going to be at least a couple of weeks to see what happens in the playoffs, what coaches, how do their teams fare, and you know, Rob did say that they are going to be looking at the playoffs potentially and sort of how those situations play out. Doc, if Philly loses in round one with Embiid and Harden, you know, Doc might be out. So I think there's a lot that's going to unfold over the next, you know, the first and second rounds. So I guess. I'd be looking at maybe like mid to late May as the time to be hiring a coach. But I am really interested to see which direction they go. You know, do they favor, as we said, a Doc Rivers or Mark Jackson, where maybe the X's and O's aren't as strong, but those guys have that presence and can be sort of the spokesperson for the team? Or are they going for maybe a Nick Nurse or Quinn Snyder, where those guys are more known
master
for their
tacticians.
Yeah. Tacticians, but not maybe the same level of gravitas. So I guess we'll see. But I would probably favor the tactician and sort of go that way. But it sounds like they might be going the other way.
All right, Jovan. Well, it's going to be a long off season. I think we've got, let's see, September. We got 5 months until the Lakers are going to be playing basketball again. So that'll give us a lot of time for these kinds of conversations. You can just stay in San Diego until then, and we'll circle back. But we'll keep checking in over the course of the offseason, maybe do a couple of live rooms where we'll be able to take questions. We've done that a couple of times over the last few weeks. We'll do more of those. In the meantime, you know, thank you for listening to the Forum Club. Jovan, thank you for stepping away from the beach to participate, and you know, we'll be back with more episodes of the Forum Club as the summer goes on.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a 1-year subscription to The Athletic.
See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.